And pleasure to be with you all. Thank you for choosing to spend this time to talk about science of reading reforms. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Department of Educational Policy Studies. And so I will be sharing my research that looks at science of reading from the policy perspective. Overall, my talk will have five parts. I'll briefly set the context for these reforms. I'll talk a little bit about definitions and spend most of my time discussing policy roots of these reforms, as well as the networks that set these reforms in motion. And then I'll conclude with the agendas, that become visible when we take more of a network perspective, on what is happening in around science of reading. For most folks in the United States, science of reading came to their attention through the work of the journalist Emily Hanford. Her podcast that came out in 2019, Hard Words, made a claim that children cannot read because teachers don't know how to teach reading because they don't learn the science of reading in the colleges that prepare them. Ed Week has been tracking the implementation of science of reading reforms across the country,
Dr.
and they.
Adamova, there's a box over your PowerPoint. I don't know if you can fix that on your end.
Oh no. Where is the box? Can you see like this? Let me try to stop and see what the problem is. Okay. Is this better or not?
We'll see. Still box there, one on top and one on the bottom.
Can you not see the text at all, or
I can see, we can see most of the text.
most of the text?
I didn't see a box. So some people don't see a box, so why don't we just keep going with it?
Okay. All right.
She said, do you have the chat open? And that might be impacting it.
I don't have the chat open, and I don't have anything else on my
Okay.
screen, except this.
All right. Minimizing photos on the right side will help. All right. People give me lots of
Okay.
suggestions.
Apologies.
Nope.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Okay. Can you still see okay?
Yes, I can see it.
Okay. All right. So Edweek has been tracking the reforms, and they claim that 39 states have passed science of reading bills. Most of the time, what we see is the introduction of state-approved curriculum, diagnostic assessments, required professional development for teachers, as well as required reading assessment for teacher licensure. However, there is a lot more. Those are often bills that include coaching support, high quality instructional materials demands, decodable books, tutoring, summer camp requirements, interventions for struggling readers, and the controversial of all, third grade retention. Not all states pass that, but often that is included in the initial versions of the bill. So, as folks are wrestling with what these bills require, and often talk about the requirements of phonics and other elements, I have been paying attention to how science of reading is discussed by the conservative organizations and how science of reading is connected to the initiatives that are pursued by conservative organizations. So, my interest is in what Heritage Foundation or American Enterprise Institute are doing around these issues. And to kind of give you a snapshot using Scarborough's rope, what I have found that it is less about science and more about curriculum reform, centralization and standardization of decision making, as well as material use, deregulation of teacher preparation, ban of social promotion, as well as privatization of instructional core. This is supported often by parent groups, professional groups, but more most often and most effectively by conservative think tanks. I won't talk about all of these in great detail, but I will mention most of them throughout my talk today. So first, definitions. And again, what matters for me is how science of reading is discussed in policy contexts. So when Emily Hanford gives her presentations to legislators and policymakers, she refers to Mark Seidenberg's blog, and says that he defines it as basic research in psychology, cognitive science, and neuroscience. However, when National Council on Teacher Quality or ExcellenEd, policy think tanks that promote measures connected to charter schools, connected to alternative routes into teaching, when policy analysts from these organizations talk about science of reading, they tend to talk about the big five: phonics, phonemic awareness, vocabulary, fluency, and comprehension. And the first time when I saw that, I was quite surprised, because I used to teach literacy methods, and those were all the things that we covered with our students, future teachers. So what the problem seemed to be wasn't really clear to me. But there's another definition that kind of helped me think differently about how people define science of reading. Karine Weaver, an activist currently based in California, formerly affiliated with NAACP, but also New Schools Venture Fund, talks about science of reading as whatever you want to call it. And this is not the only time when I have seen people refer to it this way. I've written about Tennessee contexts where science of reading advocates did something very similar. It doesn't matter what it is, we can call it science of reading, and get forward the measures that we had hoped to see implemented. Okay, so what are some of the measures that are being promoted? Well, to understand what science of reading is about, again, in policy context, it's important to look at its roots. When I talk to folks about it, many recognize that reading first was very similar to what is happening now. And in fact, the roots do go back to reading first. When No Child Left Behind had reading first as one of its components, the requirement was that reading instruction would be based in science, and that teachers should be teaching more in alignment with what the National Reading Panel suggested. One of the governors who took the lead on implementing the reading first was Jeb Bush in Florida. And one of the measures that his state really promoted was the third grade retention. His policies were evaluated by Professor Marcus Winters, and Manhattan Institute published that evaluation that suggested that third grade retention works and it's an effective measure to improve student achievement. So third grade retention has long roots, and they're connected to what Jeb Bush has done in Florida, and that's why it shows up in multiple bills around the state. So how did that come about? In 2008, Jeb Bush started Foundation for Excellence in Education, also called ExcellenEd. It's a policy think tank that brings together state legislators, decision makers from departments of education, as well as philanthropists, as well as policy analysts from think tanks and various nonprofits. ExcellenEd consists of two organizations. One of them is a nonprofit that provides model bills, and the other one is a lobbying group that actually works with representatives across the nation. Not all states have ExcellenEd lobbyists in them, but many of the states that are larger or have more contentious policy processes do have ExcellenEd lobbyists present. They receive funding from a variety of organizations, including major philanthropies like Walton Foundation. Charles Koch Institute funds their events, as well as businesses like Amplify and Lexia. And many of you are likely familiar with Amplify as the curriculum provider of Core Knowledge Language Arts. And Lexia is often associated with letters training that is mandated for teachers, but they also have curriculum and testing and a whole set of other services and products that they provide. Again, these are funders for Excel and Ed summits. Excel and Ed advances a very conservative policy agenda. They want charter school expansion. They want vouchers. They want alternative routes. They are heavily and deeply against teacher education that is based in the universities. And their summits bring together largely state policy legislators and nonprofits. So it's a unique space because there's very few academics, but a lot of people who talk policy. My little policies based on literacies have been circulated by Excel and Ed for over a decade. So here's an example for 2014 that is easily set up for the states to just insert the name of the state or the name of the policy that they came up with and then use the language already provided for them. That promotes measures that are recognizable in science of reading bills that we see circulated around the country now. You can also see here why, as I shared with you earlier, Excel and Ed and NCGQ define science of reading through the components of reading, because these have been in circulation for a while as kind of the trademark of what they do and what they focus on.
Dr. Adderall, there's still some squares on your screen. I don't know if there's something you can press or if one of our listeners can give us a hand out there.
Let me try to see. I don't have any options for how to share. I don't have anything other than this screen. I don't see any squares myself. I'm not sure what I can you see now?
The squares are still there. So this is a mystery to us as well.
Are the squares blocking the screen? Is that?
We see most of the screen. So if we can't get it, we can go with it as it is.
I honestly, there's nothing that I see.
All right, I'm sorry to interrupt.
All it's showing for me is the screen.
This is the joys of live webinars, isn't it?
Does this do anything?
That was a little better, yep. That helped it a little bit.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I can do. I apologize. All right, Excel and Ed is a member of an organization that is called ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. They have been a member of ALEC for over a decade. And ALEC is described by journalists who have investigated their activities as corporate bill mill. They're called corporate bill mill because they tend to promote the kind of policies that advantage big businesses and corporations. It's a Koch-funded organization. It's based on membership that brings together over 2,000 state lawmakers, as well as corporate members and conservative think tanks. So it's a unique space that allows decision makers at the state level interact with big businesses and corporations. And ALEC drafts bills that get circulated for adoption and implementation across the states. So Excel and Ed offered their model policy for how reading needs to be reformed in 2010, and it was adopted for circulation and implementation by ALEC in 2011. That early bill included multiple different measures, which included alternative teacher certification, vouchers, and other things. But specifically, the reading element, again, had many of the measures that we see implemented across the states now, including third grade retention, focusing on using state-identified reading curriculum, the use of scientifically based assessments, as well as extra opportunities like summer camps, or additional interventions for struggling readers. The work that I've done in Tennessee, for example, showed that the people who championed the Science of Reading bill in Tennessee in 2020 were on the Education Task Force, on ALEKS Education Task Force, when this A Plus Literacy Act was first shared with the members. That's why the timeline that Edweek shares actually starts in 2013, right? Not when Emily Hanford started talking about this, but much earlier, because the states were receiving versions of these bills prior to this becoming a real big public conversation and debate. ALEKS brings together organizations that are conducting educational business. So, for example, Imagine Learning, one of the providers of curriculum and virtual options, it has been a member of ALEKS for a while. And the CEO of formerly Wireless Generation and now Amplify was also a member of ALEKS Education Task Force when the Literacy Act was introduced. ALEKS also has members from conservative think tanks that are actively involved in anti-DEI initiatives, as well as support for the Science of Reading. But it's also connected with a state policy network that brings over 60 conservative think tanks from across the nation that are able to spread and circulate these ideas across the states. In Wisconsin, we have several conservative think tanks that are connected with state policy network. Institute for Reforming Government actually lobbied for earlier versions in Science of Reading reforms in the state. But other states have think tanks affiliated with SBN as well, including a couple in Minnesota. So it's a robust network that is able to share these ideas, promote these ideas, and introduce these ideas as prepackaged bills, and really promote their adoption across the states. The policies get updated. So this is Excel&Ed, the version of their policy from 2020, where you can see already the emphasis on screening and monitoring assessments, as well as coaching, high-quality instructional materials, and third-grade retention as has initially been identified as the priority for their bills. When I interviewed one of their representatives, she talked about how Excel&Ed works. So they have an advocacy team who can lobby in the state, and they work directly with legislators who want to champion an early literacy law in their state. And this particular policy analyst is an expert on early literacy, so she works with legislators and reviews the bill language, provides feedback on what needs to be changed, how bills need to be strengthened. She testifies in committees, travels across the country to offer testimony. In 2022, they worked with 15 states. The numbers are greater now. And all of these states, most of these states have adopted Science of Reading bills based on what Excel&Ed proposes. And they call themselves a one-stop shop for all things policy support. However, that's not where the story ends, because Excel&Ed continues working with the states even after they have adopted the bills. They have a literacy network where they bring in decision makers from the states that have passed Science of Reading bills, and they're making sure that they are adopting the kind of measures that will work as implementation of Science of Reading. They have regular meetings. They discuss what needs to be done. And Excel and Ed doesn't make public these conversations, so we don't have access to know exactly what's being said. However, they do offer the implementation guide that is available publicly. And what's interesting about that implementation guide is that directly or indirectly, it actually names the providers that states should work with to implement science of reading. So partly for this reason, activists who work in the space of literacy and reading talk about science of reading as if it needs a little trademark symbol to kind of tell you that it really is much more about business takeover than anything else. How is this possible? This is possible through the networks that mobilize these measures and circulate them across the country. So this will be the next part that I'll focus on. Penny Schwinn, who oversaw the introduction of science of reading reforms in the state of Tennessee, when asked about the successes that the state saw, talked about the role of Knowledge Matters campaign. And she shared with her audience how Knowledge Matters brought in influencers who talked to teachers, how they highlighted success in the publication, the 74 million. And that's what really helped the reform to get going, specifically around early reading, high quality instructional materials. So what is Knowledge Matters? Again, history matters a little bit. It was originally a campaign started by Robert Pondicio. Robert Pondicio used to work for the Core Knowledge Foundation. He also wrote for Manhattan Institute and is currently a fellow with the American Enterprise Institute, all conservative think tanks. He calls himself a Hirschian because he follows E.D. Hirsch and really believes that ideas that E.D. Hirsch shared in his work should be adopted across the educational system in the United States. So he started that campaign to spread these ideas. He stepped away from it, and the person who runs it now describes Knowledge Matters as a PR firm that works on marketing for a specific category. And when I asked what kind of category Knowledge Matters markets for, she explained that it is about promoting knowledge-building curricula. They use the success of Emily Hanford with her work, but they're focusing on promoting curricula. So a little bit more about Knowledge Matters. It was started by an organization called Standards Work that focused primarily on that focused primarily. I'm not able to share anymore. I can keep talking, but it would make sense if Andy, I can't share my PowerPoint. Okay. All right. Apologies. I see now the squares. Okay. Can you see okay?
Couple squares.
The squares are still there?
One left in the bottom right.
Yeah, this is all the controls I have left. This is the Zoom problem. Hopefully I'll be able to get up. Okay. Knowledge Matters campaign was started by Standards Works. It's an organization that was created to implement Common Core standards. In 2018, the founder of Standards Work wrote about the importance of curriculum renaissance, that there has to be a transition to new curricula created by startups that receives all green reviews on red reports. Standard Work started the Knowledge Matters campaign. They received funding for Charles Koch Foundation and started a national school tour. And the national school tour focused on promoting several curriculum packages, and you should already be able to recognize Amplify that I've mentioned earlier, as well as Imagine Learning. Those are both organizations that have been members of ALEC Education Task Force when early literacy initiatives were discussed. Knowledge Matters Campaign is a private organization, so they can decide what they determine to be knowledge building or high quality. So they have selected these curriculum packages as the packages that they promote, and they received funding from these publishers to conduct their national school tour, which involved going to the schools that have already implemented these packages and writing success stories, writing only the good things that are happening because of the implementation of these curriculum packages. And of course, you know, the focus on success has its benefits if you're thinking about marketing. However, in the educational system, we really want to understand the results in full breadth of what that means. And that's not what actually the campaign does. The campaign just focuses on success stories and telling compelling stories about how beautifully everything's working out when schools adopt high quality instructional materials. They offer a review tool to select curriculum, but they selected the curriculum before they developed the review tool. So we can kind of think about, you know, the kind of priorities that went into identifying the categories that the review tool should have. And what's interesting is that they tend to focus on the knowledge on the knowledge part, not the foundational skills part, even though in the states that end up implementing science of reading bills, Knowledge Matters often gets tapped into provide their rubric so that the curriculum could be selected. So you can see the disconnect as well between the ways in which agendas are articulated and then who ends up being invited to carry out those agendas once the bills pass. I want to focus a little bit more specifically on core knowledge language arts. It has an interesting history because this specific curriculum was developed by E.D. Hirsch, who in the 80s wrote cultural literacy book that talked about the ways in which for American democracy to survive, its citizens have to have core knowledge. They all have to have access to specific facts that they know about. Those facts became translated into core knowledge sequence that then schools tested and implemented and used as kind of the guide for when what to teach and when. He also created Core Knowledge Foundation to market the core sequence, and eventually Core Knowledge Foundation developed Core Knowledge Language Arts as a curriculum that is both sequenced, tight, and scripted. That curriculum was praised by conservative think tanks. Fordham Foundation, Manhattan Institute wrote about the ways in which that curriculum was the best in terms of helping underachieving students get better results in reading. Core Knowledge Language Arts ended up being acquired by Amplify, that was at that time run by News Corp, who hired Joel Klein to be its CEO. The company didn't do well, and they ended up selling Amplify to Emerson Collective, run by Laura Jobs, as well as other venture philanthropies, including A-Plus Ventures, that works with Walton Foundation, Walton Family, and invests in educational startups. So now Amplify is owned by Emerson with a board that includes other venture philanthropies. And for example, Arne Duncan sits on the board of Emerson Collective, but Margaret Spellings sits on the board of Amplify. So big decision makers, public figures with recognizable profiles who appear on national TV and talk about literacy crisis actually have ties to these organizations through the board memberships that they have. A little bit more about Core Knowledge Language Arts and Hirsch's vision for it, because even 30 years ago, he has been writing about US needing a national curriculum. And when Common Core was initially introduced, he was a firm supporter of it. He changed his position later. But Hirsch made the argument that multicultural education is the problem why there are achievement gaps, because students are taught that they're victims. And he says that progressive education is a problem because it does not have direct instruction and creates knowledge deficit. So what this helps us see is that core knowledge language arts is not just a curriculum, it's also a curriculum that has with a set of value that already has a set of values baked into it. And Hirsch is well connected with the key players in the reform movement. So when we look closely at CKLA, its current version is focused on direct instruction. It is much more scripted and it requires tight sequencing of topics. And Hirsch continues to write how US needs to have common curriculum so that all students have access to the same curriculum, which will, in his eyes, guarantee equality, but that also this curriculum will cultivate patriotism. So you can see the kind of the leaning towards more conservative values in terms of how it becomes conceptualized. When science of reading reforms bills are passed, there's quite a bit happening around state-approved textbooks. In the state of Tennessee, Knowledge Matters campaign had enough of an influence to have about half of the school districts in the state say that they're adopting what Knowledge Matters promoted. When the bill was originally discussed, some of the policymakers actually wanted to mandate only one curriculum, and there was enough argument that that did not happen. So they only got half of the share of the market as a result of these reforms. In Alabama, however, when the Literacy Act was passed in 2019, the state superintendent formed a literacy task force that ended up recommending two products that should be adopted, but McGraw-Hill Open Court was actually not eligible because of the dates of the curriculum publication. So realistically, the way the task force made the recommendation, only Amplify would have been allowed for state adoption. That caused an uproar, and the state actually backed off from that recommendation. But nevertheless, we can see how science of reading is being used to kind of allow certain products to monopolize the market. At least there's efforts to do this. This summer, a research assistant of mine and I have gone through the states that have passed science of reading bills, and core knowledge language arts is included on state approved lists in at least 23 out of 28 states that have clauses around high quality instructional materials. So it's not quite a national curriculum yet, but you can certainly see the movements in that direction across the country. And what's supporting these movements and these changes is these policy networks. You can see, Knowledge Matters campaign that is connected with both the conservative think tanks, foundations that are promoting Hirsch's ideas, as well as venture philanthropies and, for example, National Council on Teacher Quality and Excel in Ed that actually offer model policies that states end up implementing and passing. Okay. Ideas that Hirsch shared also get taken up in state policy network conversations. So in conversations about what's happening in the schools, conservative policy analysts talk about ways in which left-leaning radicalism has to be eradicated. And the way to do this is to make sure the teachers focus on content, and therefore that should be mandated by the state. And most recently, the conversation was that core knowledge language arts should be a common curriculum so that the quality of education can be improved and so that schools produce better citizens. And that brings me to the last part that I want to talk about, and that is agendas behind the science of reading reforms. Again, back to core knowledge language arts just for a second. If you know about Hillsdale College, the ultra-conservative college based in Michigan that has been embroiled in several different scandals, But very conservative in terms of the agendas it promotes, including the 1776 project that tries to counter the progressive 1619 project that centers justice and equity. Hillsdale actually uses core knowledge as the foundation for the curriculum that it offers to homeschooling families and to its own charter school networks. So if that's the organization that really likes core knowledge language arts, there's a lot that we need to think about. In Texas, conservative think tanks with support from Excel+Ed were able to push through Bill 1645, which officially is called Open Educational Resources Bill, but behind the scenes was called Amplify Bill because core knowledge language arts became the foundation for the state's open educational resources. So now any family in the state, whether in the public school, charter school, or homeschooling family, can access core knowledge language arts free of charge as the core curriculum that the state makes available to everybody. And the controversy that happened in Texas is that it has a lot of religious content, and a lot of actors have been questioning whether the state can promote religion so much. At that stage, Amplify was actually not involved with it, but the curriculum itself was still used as the foundation for this project. I'll close this kind of discussion with one more organization that also has played a role in science of reading reform movement, and that's Council of Chief State School Officers. They are a membership organization that brings together chief state school officers from across the U.S. They organized a literacy summit in February 2020, brought together major decision makers as well as players in the science of reading movement. And that summit was followed by a publication of policy recommendations. Among the funders for the policy summits that CCSSO organized are groups that you probably can recognize. It's Amplify, it's Great Minds that produces Wit and Wisdom, Cambium that owns Lexia, as well as Curriculum Associates and Renaissance that offer testing and assessment that often gets implemented as part of science of reading measures. So when CCSSO held its summit, and it was still in person, it was pre-pandemic times, one of the speakers who was invited to talk about how science of reading should be implemented was David Steiner. And David Steiner is a former commissioner of education in New York. He's also affiliated with American Enterprise Institute. He's a fellow there, as well as Core Knowledge Foundation, where he sits on the board, and he often serves as an advisor for NCTQ. So as the chiefs were having conversations about the state role in reading reforms, a few of them shared concerns that the kind of centralization that was encouraged through policy conversation was almost anti-American. Like, it was too much state control. It was taking away local decision making, and they were really worried about what that meant. And so David Steiner stepped in and said, "This is what you need to think about. Limit choices to really strong curriculum, prepare teachers to teach that curriculum, add evaluation focused on that curriculum, professional development aligned with that curriculum, use assessments that is also related to that curriculum, and make sure that procurement would be set up in such a way that they would the districts would purchase the curriculum that you chose, not what they want to choose." This kind of tightening of decision making and really centralizing and standardizing what's happening got picked up by Robert Pondicio, who you have already seen before, who's a fellow now with American Enterprise Institute, who in a newsletter for American Enterprise Institute said that the science of reading has presented an opportunity to support a common early reading curriculum and other measures that would ensure that that curriculum actually gets implemented. So Pondicio, from that talk, coined the term a virtuous circle. And the idea here is that all of these policy measures would be reinforcing each other and really pushing forward the implementation of the specific measures that the conservatives groups have identified as desirable and necessary. Of course, if we think about science of reading as these interconnected measures, then companies like Amplify that offer the curriculum, but also professional development to implement that curriculum, and tests that go with that curriculum, and home reports that are automatically generated, stand to benefit from the profits that these mandates and these bills would make possible for them. And again, the CEO of this organization was affiliated with ALEC when these measures were originally developed and introduced. So this is kind of a brief overview of why I have come to think of science of reading reforms as not about science, but about a curriculum reform that is centered on more conservative values, about centralization and standardization, both of decision-making, but also what happens in schools and classrooms, deregulation of teacher preparation, because it's often promotes private actors who offer training that is different from what's taught in the universities, as well as third grade retention and privatization of instructional core. And what I'll finish with is that what's troubling about this is that science of reading becomes a performance that disguises standardization, centralization, and privatization. And there's a lot of conversation about equity and equality, but it ultimately boils down to same inputs rather than actually equalizing opportunities and giving students from underserved backgrounds more opportunities. Importantly, however, these reforms are about rewriting of the social contract. So the state is no longer invested in taking care of minoritized and marginalized, but instead in protecting the profits of private sector actors. And that's why the involvement of ALEC, who has that has included science of reading bills on their websites, even most recently, and organizations like SPN matter in these conversations. And ultimately, because of how performative all of these conversations are, and the kind of measures that get pushed through, it's troublesome because these measures undermine democracy. And instead, what we see is more authoritarian decision-making, as well as authoritarian, more authoritarian forms of governance. So I'll stop here. If you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them. And if I don't get a chance to answer your question, please feel free to email and reach out to me, and I'll be happy to continue this conversation offline. And again, my sincere apologies for the technical issues.
All right, we have a few questions, and I'll start with one, and I'll try to get my screen fixed. Where do you see this ending?
What a brilliant question. Well, I think it depends on how well we can organize. My perspective is that citizens do have power. Educators have power, parents have power. And this is the moment for us to really reclaim it and reach out to our legislators, our state officials, and really share with them concerns about what's happening, right? I can't cover all of it in my research, and I've focused on curriculum issues just because, you know, this is something that has really been bothering me for a long time. But, you know, another aspect of all of this is also assessments and how young children are now being assessed, how frequent these assessments are. And I think in some ways, again, understanding that these reforms have deep roots, it's helpful for us to see that, the amount of testing that Common Core brought in and the struggle with that is back with a vengeance. And again, this is an opportunity for us to say, over-testing children is not the way to go either. So I think the end is possible if we join our forces and struggle towards more equitable and more just education, rather than profits for private companies.
Another question here. Can you address the rationale for bans on the approaches and strategies, such as the attacks on 3Qing?
I think this was a very strategic move, because the focus on just saying that science of reading is six components elevated the conversation, but did not eliminate the competitors on the market. And I am saying this because there is a podcast that Emily Hanford and Kimiana Burke from Excellined did with the American Enterprise Institute early on. I can't say that the year exactly, it might have been 2021, where they actually talked about the share of the market that Lucy Calkins had. And the conversation at that time was, well, we can't really tell how much of the market she controls. And then the question was, well, what can we do, right? And so the attack on 3Qing is a lot more about making sure that it is Amplify and Great Minds that get taken up and not other types of materials. So that's what I see from the conversations that I have observed in those policy circles.
Okay, core knowledge seems to have been adopted as a curriculum in ways similar to the pervasion adoption of letters as professional development for the science of reading movement. I was wondering if you've seen any connections between these two tracks within the movement.
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually one of the lines of my really complicated chart. But Louisa Moats has been involved with the same circles for a long time. Her early reports attacking whole language then were published by Fordham Institute, Fordham Foundation. So the same organization that was promoting Core Knowledge Language Arts was the organization that was promoting Louisa Moats' work. Louisa Moats was involved in the development of ELA standards for Common Core. And if I'm not mistaken, she was working on that along with Susan Pimentel, who started standards work that ended up promoting all of these curricula. So the networks overlap. And, I'll conclude with CSSSO Summit in 2020. Louisa Moats was one of the attendees and spoke extensively about the importance of training teachers in language foundations to ensure that they would implement the curriculum appropriately and correctly. So they are actors who belong to the same networks who pursue fairly similar agendas, along with this anti-equity stance, because Louisa Moats in her interviews often talks about the ways in which multicultural books will not solve any problems, and kind of disparagingly talking about schools of education focus on equity and justice, very similar to Hirsch.
Okay. Any thoughts on the international curriculum of science of reading, Australia, New Zealand, etc.? What's happening there?
So this is very interesting. I did notice that in Australia, conservative think tanks that were connected to Atlas Network, that is affiliate for State Policy Network in the United States, started very similar conversations about science of reading, about phonics. I'd be very curious to see how far Amplify will go with their products. I know that they have started adding multi-language menus on their website. And I also know that Moats, for example, Has been invited to write for the World Bank. So the science of reading is truly a global movement, and it is venture philanthropies and educational businesses, including tech companies, that are promoting these agendas across different contexts. I have colleagues who are studying this in India. So it would be interesting to see if it will be a US-based publisher like Amplify that might try to grab that market, or if there will be homegrown conservative publishers that will get philanthropic funding to develop products that will match the same conservative agenda.
How is the group Moms for Liberty connected to the network of think tanks and other groups you identified?
That's an excellent question. So Moms for Liberty have received funding from conservative groups, from conservative philanthropies, but they also attend events and kind of work with, for example, State Policy Network. And in their social media campaigns, Moms for Liberty have been promoting science of reading and have really been arguing for direct instruction. Partly because they see that conservative curriculum that receives approval from the Heritage Foundation, for example, right? Like Heritage supports core knowledge, Heritage supports wit and wisdom that great minds produces. They organize conferences where they share that curricula. So Moms for Liberty see these curricula as an opportunity to instill the kind of values that they think they stand for and help them fight against the equity, justice, and diversity initiatives that schools have.
In your opinion, how much of this movement is being driven by the large private foundations?
The foundations play a very large role in it. Again, that's not something that I included in the slide, but for example, Emily Hanford's reporting was made possible originally with funding from Lumina Foundation. She was invited to the events that Lumina organized, where she had an opportunity to think about how her reporting could have major public impact. After she did her initial podcasts and wanted to embark more on the conversation that was focused on 3Qing and what Lucy Calkins did and others did, she received funding from Oak Foundation. And it turned out that Oak Foundation, it's not a very well-known foundation in the US, but they give funding to Excel in Ed for their initiatives, as well as other organizations that are implementing these measures. And again, what Oak does is not only give money, but also bring people who receive money for similar initiatives for conversations to figure out how they can amplify their message. And so here we can see how foundations are moving from just giving money to really ensuring that there is a streamlined message that all of their grantees send out and work together to advance fairly similar agendas. Certainly, Excel in Ed's effectiveness in advancing these agendas largely comes from the fact that they do receive a lot of funding for major foundations. And the same can be said about National Council on Teacher Quality. Their list of funders is just unbelievably long, but they're another organization that is able to use the funding from foundations to create reports and to create model bills and to go to state legislators and decision makers with both reports and bills to tell them, you have a problem, this is how you fix it, right? So foundations do play a major role, but they're a part of a larger ecosystem of pieces that are really working together in this movement.
Do you have any thoughts about Swedenborg's apparent retreat from the science of reading 1.0?
Well, my sense is that there was a moment where he has this in one of the testimonies he gave, he said, the science of reading knowledge base is solid. The science of reading movement is a work in progress. And I think there was a time when he was very excited because the knowledge was being taken up. And I think there was a moment where he started realizing that there were other things that were being introduced that actually didn't match the science. And that's the part that I actually agree. And I think that's why it's so important to understand this as a curriculum reform, as a deregulation of teacher prep reform, because the measures that are being promoted often, not often, but do go counter to the proposals, right? Scientists don't say test children more, they say give them more opportunities for oral language development, and nobody's mandating that, right? So that's there, there's good reasons for why he's backing away from that.
All right, we have questions. People want to know what they can do. One says local school boards and state legislatures are already owned. Perhaps we need a class action suit. What would that look like? Who should be involved?
Yeah, I think
That outside your pay rate? Pay grade.
I think certainly my response to this we have to organize and think about those issues collectively. So in the state of Wisconsin, we have a very active network for public education, and we've been trying to figure out how to work with them on some of these questions. And I think ultimately, again, the important part here is to understand that reading is being used to make much bigger changes to the system. The fact in which, you know, local control has been largely erased through these reforms should be a concern to a wide range of people, whether they worry about reading or not. And so for that reason, building coalitions, building networks, and acting collectively, is one step. And then the second step is, you know, what's feasible in your state, right? Are your legislators open to a conversation? Are there ways in which you can initiate conversations with the school boards? Again, I think in some ways, when it comes down to money and the fact that this is now becoming a major line in budgets, and the way in which it just bleeds money from school systems should be a concern to everybody. In some school districts in Wisconsin, we already also see that the results are not what was promised. And that's reasonable because nobody ever actually showed achievement gains. So that's another tool to use to actually talk about achievement and really evaluate whether these reforms were worth the kind of investment they required.
Someone says that we can share our success in pushing back here in California, and that will be one of our speakers next year, early next year. But related to what you said, is there any evidence that states that adopt science reading curriculums is having an impact on reading growth? Any research that shows what works or how it works? Because that's kind of what parents are interested in.
Of course, of course. The interesting thing here, Excel & Ed had a speaker this past November, and one of the first opening jokes that that speaker said shared with the audience was, you know, I wanted to start a nonprofit, and I thought I would use the tagline, we'll produce the best kind of research your money can buy. And nobody laughed at that joke. And
Yes.
partly they didn't laugh because that's what this industry is doing, right? And so to the question about the impact of these reforms, you know, Mississippi was used as this miracle where these reforms produced these massive changes. And then the closer analysis actually showed that there was no real true gain. And the claims of success were largely overstated. So I can't say that we have evidence that it hasn't proved anything. But I can also say that if you look at the chart where right after Mississippi, it was South Carolina, it was North Carolina, right? Like all of these states that have been reforming reading all this time, they did not see the improvement. And it was, in fact, conservative organizations who picked up on the fact that a lot of money was being spent and no return was actually detected. So the historical evidence of how these reforms have been rolled out shows that the improvement will not happen. And I tend to agree that, it's not going to happen if we have public school systems that are severely underfunded, that are now spending even more money on curriculum and professional development than meeting basic needs of their students.
Okay. Related thing, someone said this is not a conservative thing. Louisa Moats and Emily Hanford, as well as others involved in the legislation and in state corporations, Cambrian, et cetera, are in fact liberal. This is quite partisan. What would you say to that?
I'm not sure that I would call Louisa Moats liberal. Perhaps that's up for debate. I've spent a lot of time listening to her interviews and to her talks. Emily Hanford certainly does describe herself as a liberal. However, I shared the slide with, Arne Duncan serving on Emerson Collective and Margaret Spellings on serving on Amplify's board to kind of hint at the fact that it does have the appearance of bipartisan support. What is important is the values that end up being promoted through it. And if the curricula that end up being implemented are the kind of curricula that the Heritage Foundation or Manhattan Institute see as what should be taught, or state policy network that is Koch funded. That's where we need to look at the roots. And that's where we really need to ask ourselves if this is something that progressive folks would actually support. The definitions of equity and justice that Hirsch discusses don't match the vision of progressive thinkers. So because of how pervasive those ideas have become, I beg to differ on this assessment.
Okay. One last question and then we'll let you go. Has anyone done a scientific study comparing student reading levels in schools that use core knowledge for a few years versus those that use more progressive approaches to reading instruction?
So the reality is that comparative studies in schools are actually fairly difficult. The gold standard of randomized controlled trials don't actually work really well in school settings. We don't have the ability to control all the variables because of all the ways in which schools are embedded in a deeply unequal and segregated society. There have been studies that have looked at students' performance on standardized assessments when core knowledge language sequence was implemented. Those studies were funded by Walton Foundation and a couple of other major foundations. Those studies were published in early 2000s, and they showed positive gains. So there have been some studies that have provided assessments and evaluations of at that time sequence and showed positive results. How that compares to other types of curriculum, that's a interesting question, complicated question. And again, I don't think that it's fully feasible to answer that.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for your time. Let's leave it there today. And I apologize for some of the technical difficulties, but I cannot thank you enough for bringing this very important information. And I've put your two article links to your two articles in the chat. So thank you very much for your work here, Dr. Adarova.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for this great conversation. I appreciate everybody. Enjoy the debate.
Yes, everyone. Enjoy the debate. And I'll have a recording of this. And again, I don't know what went wrong technically, but I really enjoyed the question and answer. This was incredible. You guys asked very good questions. So I will see you guys later.